This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com coming to you on the 19th day of February 2011 here in Japan and the 18th day of February 2011 in the United States, where I'm joined on the line by our regular monthly guest, Lieutenant Eric Schein. Lieutenant Eric Schein, of course, available at crossingtherubicon.org and martiallaw911.com, and of course, the co-host of In the Zone on Saturday nights on Republic Broadcasting with yours truly, James Corbett. And that's, of course, at republicbroadcasting.org on Saturday nights at 9 p.m. Pacific, which is 12 midnight Eastern. So, Lieutenant Eric Schein, thank you, as always, for joining us once again.
Thank you, James.
All right. Well, a lot going on with your case, especially I know that you've just submitted a new stage of the appeal process. So let's get into it and talk about some of the latest developments.
Well, it's now before I've appealed it from the Coast Guard Commandant. And, you know, even that term Commandant or Commandante, to me, echoes back to Germany and I don't want to say Colonel Klink, but it's a military outfit. They're really not supposed to be. It's, you know, the commandant is supposed to be like the surgeon general or attorney general. He's supposed to be a civilian. And even though, like, here in the United States, we've seen Jocelyn Elders, who was a surgeon general at some point, she came in her general's uniform as a surgeon general, rather than wearing a civilian garb. We have these names, attorney general and surgeon general and commandant, for these civil services, so that it's clear that we have a civilian in charge of all of our military services or anything that could be even construed as a military service. And even the attorney general, although a civilian, and most of that, like the Department of Justice, is civilian and civil service, they should have a large degree of oversight over what's going on in the military as well. But it's almost as if, to a large degree, they've taken their hands off the military court system that is built up underneath the executive branch. But my appeal now goes from the commandant of the U.S. Coast Guard. I'm not in the Coast Guard, never served in the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard is saying that I'm a civilian, even though I'm a naval officer coming out of Kings Point. And they're coming after me for my quote-unquote engineering license, which is, it's sometimes referred to as a Coast Guard license, but it's actually a Federal Maritime Officer or Merchant Marine license. For me, rather than being like a captain's license, it's an engineering license. Mine's a chief engineer's license. Unlimited horsepower, limited tonnage, and then as I had my second assistant engineer's license, unlimited horsepower, unlimited tonnage, motor, steam, and gas turbine, and I was approved to sit for my first assistant engineer's license, unlimited tonnage, unlimited horsepower. This is like big container ships. We use these licenses even to work for the Navy as a port engineer. General Electric and a lot of other companies look for, because it's almost like a professional PE license or a professional engineering license. But the Coast Guard brought charges against me March 6, 2003. They've held me within what is clearly a military tribunal, and you would not see this from the transcripts unless I had brought it up and said something on the record. I've asked repeatedly for audio-visual recording of these proceedings. But one of the things that's become abundantly clear to me, even just in the last stages of this, and one of the reasons they've tried to connect me to Timothy McVeigh, one of the reasons they've declared me to be a physical threat, one of the reasons that they've tried to say that I'm quote-unquote suicidal, one of the reasons that they have called in the Federal Protective Services within the proceedings in the court, where the judge was a lieutenant commander in the Coast Guard, Walter J. Brzezinski. Whether he's retired or active duty does not matter. The conflict of interest is enormous. And they've already had one ALJ recuse himself due to undeclared conflicts of interest, or, we don't know. He was motioned for a recusal. But if you weren't actually sitting in the proceedings, you would not see. And even from the transcripts, it's difficult to tell, and they've tried to cover this up. They had Christopher Tribble, who is a Coast Guard officer. They tried to present him on the record. He tried to present himself on the record as Mr. Tribble. rather than what he is now, Lieutenant Commander AAA, in uniform, a commissioned, what they're declaring to be a military officer now in the Coast Guard within Homeland Security rather than a civil service. And you would not know or understand this unless I brought it up in the proceedings. And even the judge who, you know, whether you want to say, well, he made a mistake, this mistake is so large that it calls into question everything else that he said or did in the proceedings. But this judge, quote unquote, and he's not a judge, he's not part of the Article III judiciary, he's a member of the executive branch. They used to call him hearing officers. They've changed the name to administrative law judge to make it look like it's a real court, a legitimate court, when it's not. It's a member, it's a police court. It's a military police court. But the judge, quote unquote, the administrative law judge or hearing officer, Lieutenant Commander Walter J. Brzezinski, declared the proceedings to be an Article 32 proceeding, which is a grand jury indictment proceeding in a military tribunal. But they've also made it very clear that I am, quote unquote, a civilian, not a naval officer, not a member of the Coast Guard. I've never served in or have any dealings with the Coast Guard. And coming out of my academy, I didn't go to a state academy. I didn't come up the hawse pipe, which is the term we use in the industry for someone who, you know, fights their way through the system from the ground up and doesn't go to like a state or a federal maritime academy and just sails, goes back to school, gets their college degree, upgrades, gets their license, and moves their way up the food chain, so to speak. I went to a federal military service academy, which is the United States Merchant Marine Academy. And who do you think would know more about the United States Merchant Marine than someone like myself, especially more so than the Coast Guard? But what the Coast Guard is doing, they're using these NAVICs, which is a navigation vessel inspection circular, and it's put out to the industry. It's basically promulgated by the Coast Guard to govern the Coast Guard, and it's almost like a weather report or an advisory that's put out to the industry. This is what the Coast Guard is doing. These are the changes in the laws. We're putting this out as an advisory to the industry so that you know what we're doing and you can either, you know, comply with the laws, rules, regulations that we are complying with as a guide, and it is only to be a guide, but it does not govern and it is not controlling on the United States Merchant Marine. But now Janet Napolitano, the Secretary of Homeland Security, has put out a delegation, which is much like an executive order, but not from the president, from someone below the president, and in it has declared that the United States Merchant Marine, a civil service, basically everything on the water, this includes, you know, your little speedboat, sailboat, container ship, oil tanker, American flag, foreign flag, you know, anything on, above, or near the water, or even under the water, because the Coast Guard is now looking for submarines. And I mean, it's to the point where the Coast Guard really believes that we are in a declared war, in a world war. And they're pushing this issue, like even now, I don't know if you've seen any, probably not over there in Japan, but the Navy is now putting out these commercials on TV that it's a global force for good. And they show like the global map and they show the seven seas and the various oceans and they show all the different missions and, you know, like a flashcard mentality of all these little short vid spots in, you know, like Navy SEALs, et cetera. But it's to me, it's a pretty scary commercial. And I'm a Navy officer. I'm a military officer. I believe in defense. I believe in our, you know, being able to defend our country and other countries and our neighbors, you know, Canada and more, and helping out wherever we can. But it's as if the Navy has now become the world's maritime military police force. Much like the Coast Guard, which is now not just a Coast Guard for the United States, it's a Coast Guard for the world. And what's going on in this militarization of these courts, recreation of these admiralty courts, is extremely scary because they're pulling me in. They had a medical officer from the Coast Guard a Captain Arthur French who came in, and I didn't get a hearing until they brought charges March 6, 2003. They did summary judgment using the first ALJ to do it. I motioned for his recusal. He did not recuse himself. I motioned for his recusal immediately, as it was clear he's not going to give me a hearing, back in 2003. We actually even filed temporary restraining orders against him in federal district court and sued the Coast Guard and ALJ McKenna. And rather than the federal district court hearing it, they came up with the issue of sovereign immunity, basically saying that this judge is immune, even though he's not a real judge, a member of the Article III judiciary. He's a executive branch hearing officer. He's a police officer, more or less. And these courts now, even though they've called him an Article II or an Article 32, Article II refers to our Constitution, which is the executive branch. And under Article II, and this goes to a case that I cited in my own proceedings, Reed versus Covert from 1957, the executive branch is not supposed to be carrying on courts. That's why we have an independent judiciary. But they've created these administrative courts underneath the executive branch that are like police commissions, much like the Keenan-Hamilton 911 commission. And that was not a true, you know, judicial proceeding or commission. It was an executive branch proceeding where the executive branch was setting up a commission to investigate itself. And there was no true independence in the 9/11 commission. And the very same thing in my own situation, where we even have like ALJ Brzezinski, the lieutenant commander from the Coast Guard. He was involved in the 9/11 proceedings himself, along with Kenneth Feinberg. And a lot of people are starting to figure out who Kenneth Feinberg is and that he's not a, you know, an honest, decent person. He's even going out saying that he represents BP and trying to get people to sign waivers of their rights. Or I'm sorry, he's not saying he represents BP. He's saying that he doesn't represent BP and that he actually does. And he's saying that he's neutral and he's not. And he's actually getting paid, I think it's like $1 million a month from BP to represent BP to minimize the damages to BP from what happened in the Gulf. And the Coast Guard is deeply involved in that. Sally Brice O'Hara, who came out on national TV in front of President Obama and Janet Napolitano on CNN and wherever, she claimed that the Coast Guard and BP were partners. She has her signature on my commandant's decision on appeal. So this rat's nest of individuals who are betraying their countrymen here in America, I'm in the midst of a number of them, and a lot of them are tied to the Coast Guard. At the upper levels, I'm talking Coast Guard Commandant Admiral Allen, Coast Guard Commandant Admiral Loy, who now works for Lockheed Martin. Allen now works for RAND Corporation. Thomas Collins, Admiral Collins, and others who have literally crossed the Rubicon, turned the Coast Guard from a civil service, a federal maritime police force, into a military police force inside Homeland Security of anywhere from 42,000, I think it's grown up to about 65,000 members now, to where there's a lot of people that are benefiting from this, like different insurance companies and banks cater directly to the military, and you have to be a military member for them to represent you. And I won't give any names now, like USAA. Oh, I'm sorry. And I'm represented by USAA, and I don't, you know, I don't want to speak badly of USAA, but there are individuals who are benefiting and profiting from this directly, to where the Coast Guard, it's not just the 40 to 65,000 members of the Coast Guard, uniform members, who now can be represented by USAA as a major windfall, but now it's all those family members as well. You know, literally hundreds of thousands of individuals that now can be represented by USAA, an insurance company, and get their insurance from this company. And it's a windfall or a major boon for this company. And that's just a small, you know, piece of the pie in what's going on. The National Defense Industrial Association, NDIA, is a 1,365 member of federal military contractors like Lockheed Martin, Boeing, General Dynamics, and more. They awarded Admiral Allen, who was the former incident commander for the BP incident, the National Incident Commander, and who's now working for the RAND Corporation, Military Industrial Complex, they gave him an award when he was the commandant before he became the National Incident Commander. And most people don't realize that that award was a recognition, a nod, although it was not granted for that exact reason. Behind the scenes, it is known that it was granted for him turning a civil service into a branch of military overnight and converting this fifth branch of military that's not in the Department of Defense into a branch, civil service into a branch of military that is not in the Department of Defense but is in the Department of Homeland Security. And these proceedings that I've been trapped in, they say are about my license, but why would they try to connect me to Timothy McVeigh? Why would they try to force me, and this is the intent of the entire proceedings, they brought charges against me for quote-unquote being depressed. They're trying to force me into a psychiatric examination so that they can brand me and have me declared medically, mentally incompetent, and also say that I'm a physical threat and some kind of danger to public safety, so that they could stick me in a black hole somewhere. You know, I don't know if it's in this country, in a mental ward or a prison or overseas in some black site. I'm scared. I mean, what else am I supposed to say? When you see the kind of corruption and the strings that are being pulled and how high they go up in the command, there's no adult, there's no leadership, there's no one stepping in and saying, well, you can't do this. This is not good for anyone. Why are you allowing this to go on? Why are you doing this? The Coast Guard has had me since 2003. I did not get a hearing until May of 2008, and it was a four-day trial in a federal fusion center, what they're calling now, fusion center, in Long Beach, California, where hearsay within hearsay is admissible, and they can use, and even the commandant is trying to seek in my own situation, to where they can force an individual into a psych exam, a psychiatric examination, without a due process hearing. Basically to where a bunch of people could come in and call you a witch, or say that you're crazy, or say that your actions were crazy, or say that what you did seemed crazy, and then without a hearing, and without you being able to defend yourself, without you being able to call witnesses, without you being able to present evidence and go on direct, because the only thing they allowed was cross-examination of the witnesses they brought up, and then even the judge took over and did the cross-examination himself rather than allowing me to do it. And a lot of this is all a matter of record. It's all in transcripts. But it's clearly a privy council, a star chamber, a resurrection of that concept or witch trial. It's much like Kafka, and anyone who hasn't read, The Trial, it's a book by Franz Kafka from Czechoslovakia. And it's, I'd say science fiction, but I think it was based upon what and how they use our court system, or what appears to be our court system, and even psychiatry to a large extent. I don't believe I don't believe in psychiatry. I don't believe in psychology. I would warn and tell people not even to disclose things to their, priest. I don't even know if confession is a good idea anymore. And I was Roman Catholic, born and raised Catholic, went to Catholic grade school and high school. And I look even now at the stories of President Bush and Skull and Bones, and the stories of them going in the coffin and, telling their secrets to basically the confessional in the Roman Catholic Church, to where it almost looks like, three upstanding coffins, to where people, funnel in with a priest in the middle coffin and a person on either side, and you go in and tell your secrets. And, it sure is a way to control people if you know all their deepest and darkest secrets and things that they feel guilty about. And I, you know, I truly and firmly believe, and this is a little bit off topic, but it kind of goes to the root of it all, is I believe that the Catholic Church is nothing but a constitutional monarchy that creates and has created all other constitutional monarchies for a very long time. And it's still at it. And that much of what I'm going through and the world now is about reinvigorating the United Kingdom worldwide. That's why I'm before this like Privy Council or Star Chamber or whatever you want to call it. But it's clearly a military tribunal to where the Coast Guard is saying it's a branch of military. And it's saying that this was an Article 32 proceeding. The investigating officer or prosecutor, no matter what you want to call him, is a lieutenant commander in the Coast Guard. And he's a JAG officer, Judge Advocate General, uniformed, commissioned military attorney who went to JAG school and law school. He, in the interim, from when they brought charges against me in 2003, March 6, 2003, to May 20th, 21st, 22nd, 23rd of 2008, he brought the charges against me and then goes away to law school. They carry out a summary decision of me, the first ALJ does, in 2003, late 2003, early 2004. And I motioned to have this ALJ recused because he didn't hold a hearing and didn't allow me into a hearing. And this is when I still had legal counsel representing me, albeit conflicted, a guy named Peter Forgey and also Frank Brucolari, defense counsel for the shipping companies and the union who were forced upon me in these proceedings. But ALJ, it gets remanded back from the Coast Guard Commandant after appeal. And I had actually appealed before that about the recusal of ALJ McKenna. And they said that because there had been no hearing, they could not, the Commandant could not rule on the issue that there had been no hearing and force a hearing because there had been no hearing. So it was total circular logic to where the Commandant was saying it was not ripe. They could not, you know, rule on it or intercede because the judge had not put out a final order and had not held a hearing. So I was kind of like stuck in purgatory or limbo, to where I couldn't do anything about it. We even tried to go into federal district court. It's basically the same thing. So he finally puts out a final order, put out two final orders, one in February and then one in June of 2004. And then it goes up to the Commandant. Commandant sat on it for 2 years, 2.5 years. And then he kicks it back, remands it to the first ALJ McKenna to hold a hearing. And then at that time, ALJ McKenna finally recuses himself, not from any motions or anything that I had done, but sua sponte of his own volition. And then the matters are reassigned by Chief Administrative Law Judge Ingolia. He's actually been sued by a bunch of people, and he's been involved in a bunch of corruptions himself. He reassigns it to Brudzinski, Lieutenant Commander Brudzinski, who's a former or current Lieutenant Commander in the Coast Guard himself, completely conflicted, more conflicted than ALJ McKenna. And then he gets it in early 2007 and doesn't hold a quote-unquote hearing until May of 2008. And that hearing was nothing. It was not a hearing. It was completely one-sided. I was not allowed to call witnesses. I was not. I had 180 exhibits or pieces of evidence. Two, they had 60-some-odd pieces of evidence against me. Most of it was even my own civil complaints from federal district court that they had stepped on. We had two pieces of evidence to counter every piece of evidence they had, minimally, and they would not allow us to present it. The only two things that were presented was, one was a brief from Amnesty International on justice delayed is justice denied. And it went into the whole thing about international crimes, war crimes and crimes against humanity, and certain things like, you know, even compelling somebody to testify against themselves, as they have attempted over and over again to do here, to where they have tried to force me into a psych exam before the hearing, before a due process hearing on the merits, so as to preclude the need for a hearing, and also to have me determine, and this is completely prejudicial because they're doing it before a hearing, they've already decided that I am somehow, quote unquote, mentally ill. And this is what they do to whistleblowers. And this is what they do to people that they want to steal their property from. This is what they do to people that they want to steal their constitutional rights from. This is what they do to people that they want to steal their citizenship from. Because once you're declared to be medically, mentally incompetent, they're trying to say that I'm delusional and more, is you're a man without a country. You're a man or a woman without a state. You're a person without any rights whatsoever. You are a non-entity. You cannot speak for yourself. You are incompetent. And, I, you know, coming from my position, it's a very, very scary position where you see all these extremely powerful forces and these individuals who have been involved in a ton of corruptions, like Captain Arthur French, the Coast Guard medical officer, came in and never seen me before. I never had given him a release or given him any records. He never interviewed me. He never interviewed any of my doctors. Comes in, sits in the proceedings, and testifies against me and declares me to be medically, mentally incompetent and bases his decision on how I behave in the courtroom, defending myself against a branch of military that I'm not in, in what is clearly a military tribunal, and declares that I am medically, mentally incompetent because of the way I defend myself. And that's why I asked for audiovisual recording in the proceedings, was so that it was clear, like every time the judge, Lieutenant Commander Brzezinski, would call in the Federal Protective Services pretending that I was some kind of physical threat. And this goes to the standard here in the United States where you have to be a threat to yourself, you know, suicidal, or a threat to others, to where they can force you under a quote-unquote psychiatric examination or under psychiatric care. And he continually called in the Federal Protective Services pretending like I was somehow charging the bench, which was utterly ridiculous. And I made it clear on the record that, you know, many times I was sitting there and he would yell at me and continually order me to sit down, Mr. Shine, sit down. And I'd be like sitting there. And I would say in the record, Your Honor, I don't appreciate that. And I am sitting here and I have been sitting here the whole time that you're filling that into the record. And this is why in any kind of a proceeding where they're going to have someone declared medically, mentally incompetent, whether the military is doing it, whether states are doing it, whether the federal government is doing it, whether some government overseas is doing it, whether some kingdom is doing it, it should all be recorded in audiovisual format, especially nowadays in this age of information, so that there's no question about it, so that if anybody wants to review the record, they could go back in and say, like, I didn't do anything. The judge is obviously filling the record and has some kind of bent, and some kind of conflict of interest that he's trying to cover up. And it was real clear that his association as a direct commissioned officer in the Coast Guard, a lieutenant commander with a pension coming from the Coast Guard, he could not somehow overcome. And he had a clear bias, not only against me because I was not in the Coast Guard, but because the Coast Guard had brought charges against me, but he had a clear bias in favor of the Coast Guard, his current as some kind of civil servant and former military officer within the Coast Guard himself. I'll stop there. And if you want to ask any questions or throw anything at me or anything,
you've certainly put a lot on the table there. So it's, there's so much to pick up on, but, I guess something that strikes me is the historical, analogies that are very much reflected in what we've seen in the United States over the past decade. And just some of them that come to mind, of course, is, the passage of the Enabling Act in 1933 in Nazi Germany after the Reichstag firebombing. False flag event. And
but James, you know that we had our own Enabling Act the very same, I think it was the same year.
That's exactly, okay, 1933. All right, please tell us about it.
Well, we had the very same thing here in the United States, an Enabling Act, and it was called that, and it was in 1933 or 34.
Tell us about it and its historical context and what it did.
Well, I would assume, and it's been a while since I've spoken on this or even studied it, but from memory, it was very similar to what went on in Germany, and it gave plenary powers to the president. It basically created a dictatorship here in the United States. And many people called Roosevelt a dictator. I mean, he served into four terms. If he had not died or was stricken ill, he may have served four, five, six, you know, he didn't finish his fourth term. And after that, I'm trying to think, I want to say it was the 28th Amendment, but I'm probably 22nd. I'd have to look it back up. I used to know that offhand. I think it might be the 22nd Amendment was passed limiting the terms in office for the president to two terms. And, you know, even if you look at what happened at the very same time, not only our Enabling Act here in the United States, but the, the Enabling Act also went to this. It was the, not only the bankruptcy that was declared, and I think that was in the same year in 33, but Roosevelt put out an executive order to seize four precious metals, gold, silver, steel was one of them. And if you think of how steel is a precious metal, and you think of, you know, in America, Second Amendment and arms, you know, your right to bear arms or whatever, that could be seen as a roundabout way of being able to seize people's, you know, weapons that they have for self-defense or whatever. Second Amendment rights. And, you know, a lot of people saw Roosevelt himself as a tyrant, as a dictator. And, you know, I think to a large extent that people are right on both sides, whether it be the Democrats and or the Republicans, that we have this tendency, and this was one of the debates in our founding, was against a strong central government, was against, you know, there was the debate about Federalists and Anti-Federalists, Hamilton and Jefferson and Tammany Hall and Aaron Burr and a whole slew of our founders who did not want to see a strong central government, or if there was a strong central government, it was for very limited purposes. And this also went to issues of not only secession and being able to, if you can join, you can leave. And this is part of the issues that led up into the Civil War and more. But to where the central government was more about common issues of common defense, common borders, like, you know, California is not only a waterborne border for California, but it is for the rest of the United States as well. It is also a lot of our maritime ports where cargo comes into and leaves the United States. So it's an issue of not only civil defense and national security for California itself, or I should say civil defense for California, but also national security for all other states, just like Texas is, just like all the northern states are with Canada. And to say that, you know, we don't need to or should not defend ourselves and have a border with Canada. Canada is not the United States, and the United States is not Canada, although there are a lot of moves, as you know, even more recently, to make that more or less, you know, I guess, true to where it is the same, to where there is some kind of North American union, much like the European Union. But it doesn't matter what you call the United States, whether it's the United States of America, and it does matter, I'm sorry, but what I mean to say is that whether it's the North American Union and it eventually devolves or evolves into that, and Canada and the United States and Mexico become one, that has been the trend for God knows how long. Just look at where America started with the 13 colonies and look at where it's at today. It's not even bound by, you know, California. It goes out to Hawaii and Alaska and more. But if that happens, it's the rights of the people, the rights of the citizens, that is more crucial than anything else. And that situations like my own, regardless of what we call the bigger picture, whether it be the United States of America and or Canada and or Mexico, and or eventually if it becomes the North American Union, we don't have much to say about that, which appears there's, you know, powers that appear to be much greater than the American people right now for whatever reason. And I think a lot of it is to do with the American people and people of the world aren't quite awake enough yet, but I think that's changing even with what's going on in Wisconsin and other places. with the attacks upon, and even going on in what is going on in Wisconsin, and we've talked about this before, James, is the governor of that state is a guy named Walker, Scott Walker. And I brought up about Bush, Davis, Walker family, which is an enormous power broker family that has no true allegiance to the United States of America as a republic. It has more ties to these royal families of Europe and ancient civilizations that even predate what we now see as the nation states in Europe or the European Union or the United Kingdom. And they're internationalists, they're globalists, they're industrialists. They are these large corporate and, I dare say, fascist families that predate nation states, predate states, predate kingly states or kingdoms, predate princely states. They have carried their names and their family, genealogy and you know, their heirs throughout all civilizations. And they do not care. They use a republic more as an ATM machine to build up the public trust, then tear it down, shut it down, and steal all that was part of the public trust. And what went on in former Soviet Union, which was the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, the giant white elephant sale that went on in the fall of the Soviet Union, is the very same thing that is going on here in the United States, to where when there's a conversion from, say, and this is laid out in Philip Bobbitt's book, The Shield of Achilles, from princely state to kingly state, from kingly state to state nation, from state nation to nation state, and what they are trying to convert us now is from nation states like the United States and or Canada and or Mexico and or England and or the nations in Europe, Italy and more, Greece, you can even Germany, to these market states, to where the United States, Canada, Mexico, and even South America is a market state, North and South America, to where the European Union is a market state, and to where Asia or Eurasia is a market state. And then you can throw in wherever, you know, Australia and New Zealand and other states, those will probably become part of the European Union as that market state, because there's even battles now to make the Falkland Islands, which is off of Argentina, part of the EU, and other portions that have been part of, you know, quote unquote, the United Kingdom or the Commonwealth. But I'm trapped within the system where they're using fascism, the military-industrial complex, the conversion of civil services. It's almost like taking the DMV and putting it under the control of the Army. It's like taking the FAA and putting it under control of the Air Force. Now the Coast Guard, rather than, you know, taking it and placing it under the Navy, it has converted itself into a special branch of military that is now coming under Title 10, which is military law that is to be contained within the Department of Defense only. That is martial law. It is military law is a form of martial law. It is a dictatorship. They are using the Coast Guard as a special branch of military in Homeland Security to not only police civilian law or civil law, to regulate civil law, to enforce civil law, but to adjudicate, meaning to try and carry on trials of, you know, saying that it's coming under civil law and that the end result forms civil law, but it's made by a branch of military. The Coast Guard, using military personnel, military assets, even to where, even if they use civilians, they have civilian attorneys that are involved in some of this, but these civilian attorneys are being supervised by military officers, commanders like Commander Gilreath in the Maritime and International Law Group, CG-0941, in the Coast Guard. That is the group that is representing the Commandant against me. And not only did I go through the first case, then I go through proceedings, a complete legal battle against a branch of military, and they're pulling every kind of trick in the book that you can imagine, you know, one after the other. Stolen medical records, falsified medical records. They put a bolo out on me saying that I may be dangerous. They said that I'm a physical threat to myself and to others. They try to tie me to Timothy McVeigh, on and on and on and on. And when you see this level of corruption where there are no adults, there is no oversight, there are no people stepping in and saying, you cannot do this. You cannot do this to another human being, let alone a naval officer, let alone somebody who's not in your branch of the military, let alone somebody who you're saying is a civilian, let alone somebody who you're saying is and accusing of being medically, mentally incompetent and forcing them to be their own legal counsel somehow. This smacks of Nazi Germany. And I hate to use that euphemism, but that's exactly what went on in Germany, to where the royals, the Habsburgs and others, went after the elite. They went after the intellectuals. They made them the injured and infirm. And then they went after the injured and infirm to kill two birds with one stone. They went after like Kafka, like Franz Kafka, like in that story. They went after all the scientists, the intellectuals, the professors. You can even see what's going on under Scott Walker in Wisconsin. They're going after public servants. People who do not work for a profit, they work at the beck and call of the people at cost, and they are due and should receive. And I say they should be the best and brightest of us all, and that the state and the federal government should set the standards for employment rights, for pensions, for protections, for due process and more, rather than being the scourge of employment. And rather than being the bottom of the barrel, we need the best and brightest in public service and public office to make it the most efficient and to make sure that the taxpayers get their money's worth. I think that, you know, public service is the best bang for the buck in many situations, like our postal service, like our fire department, like our police department. You know, we have enough problems with civil service police. When you privatize these services, it gets like ancient Rome, and that's the reason why they're doing it. To like in Nero's case, where they had, you know, the fire department. It's Ray Bradbury wrote about this, like in Fahrenheit 451, and you know that's what Michael Moore used as Fahrenheit 9/11 as a euphemism about book burning, and about what happened with Nero, to where the fire companies, because many of the stuff, even insurance, these are not old concepts. They've been around for thousands of years. You know, they used to insure slaves. They used to insure soldiers. They used to steal the money, or the princely families or the kingly estates would get the money paid out by the insurance companies if they lost the soldiers that they fielded. And it was to pay and to reinvigorate and to retrain soldiers and put them in the field. But oftentimes, it was just as profitable to lose a war as it was to win a war, because you would get paid the death benefits for the soldiers that you lost in the battle. And the more that both sides lost, the bloodier the war, whether it be our own civil war or many of the wars that were carried on under Napoleon and others in Europe, a lot of families, a lot of people behind the scenes made an untold fortunes in what went on. And it's tied into my own situation where we are insured and we have enormous death benefits. And they're coming after not only federal maritime officers like myself and the mob, mafia is directly involved in this, but also military personnel. Not just, you know, people like myself who are one foot in civil service and one foot in military service as a naval officer and also as an officer in the United States Merchant Marine, but also military personnel, to where you've got individuals who are stealing the death benefits or even profiting, like Prudential was nailed for this, for stealing, I think it was $100 million or more dollars, from rather than putting out a lump sum payment to our soldiers and or their families for, you know, losing loved ones, loss of a loved one or injury to a loved one, you know, the breadwinner for the family, to make sure that they can survive and that their family is not any worse off by losing that family member or even having them injured. But Prudential was, rather than putting out one check as a lump sum payout, they were keeping the lump sum in their own bank account and then allowing the families to write checks off of it while collecting the interest off the lump sum. And these are the kind of rackets that are going on. And people like myself, who are deeply buried on the inside, who can name names, point to people, explain what, you know, Kenneth Feinberg is up to, explain what Lieutenant Commander Brzezinski is up to, even with commerce cases and transportation cases, like TSA case of Rendon versus TSA, to where they set it up to where it's a $700 fine now if you curse in a public transportation system like an airport or a taxi, or even in your own car and you curse at a police officer. It's a $700 fine now, and they're setting up all this case precedence so that when they take the country down, take down the republic, they can put in all these rules. And that's why they call them rulers, because they use rules rather than laws. They, instead of protecting and recognizing constitutional limits, constitutional prohibitions, constitutional entitlements, and we all remember Bush coming out and talking about entitlements, and that we need to do away with these quote-unquote entitlements. An entitlement is your right under the law, and it is your ability to protect that right yourself. And now what they've done in this whole thing about tort reform, all the cases about quote-unquote McDonald's and hot coffee and people getting spilled, you know, in their lap and getting burned and more, and saying that we need to, you know, tort reform, we need insurance reform. This was all about limiting damages to insurance companies, and many of these insurance companies are owned and controlled by crime families, mafia, and they're not necessarily Italian. Many are white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. Many are Christian. Many are Catholic, or say that they are at least. Many are agnostic, atheist. They don't even care. They just put on the headdress of a claimed nation or state or religion, and many are I would dare say Jewish as well, and that's why it is upon all people from all nations, all races, all ethnicities, all religions, to clean up their own backyard, because they are the only ones, whether it be Catholic, whether it be Christian, whether it be Jewish, whether it be agnostic or atheist, whether it be Italian, you see what's going on with Berlusconi now. Some of these people, through whatever means, and I hope Berlusconi, and he's been able to escape, you know, one charge after another. This guy has spent so much money in legal fees. It's in the hundreds of millions of dollars. I think it may even approach a billion. I mean, it's an absurd number, and the number of times that he's been in court. But hopefully this individual will be taken out of power, along with many others. And that the power will be restored to the people, not just in countries that we're seeing stuff going on in the Middle East, but here in the United States, with what's going on possibly in Wisconsin and other states, to where it really truly is of, by, and for the people of the world, and that this globalist movement, this internationalist movement, this hyper-industrialist movement that is of, by, and for the rich, will be converted and changed so that we hopefully do away with what I see, that the driving force behind this is these ancient royal families who have been playing these games like the Habsburgs. ThyssenKrupp, Thyssen is the German weapons and warship manufacturer from Nazi Germany, along with Krupp, who's been making cannons for, you know, since the 1500s. Thyssen is married into the Krupp family, or Krupp family is now married into the Thyssen family, vice versa. And they are both now married into the Habsburg family, which is the German royal family that World War I and II and even the Cold War was centered around. And if you read books like Philip Bobbitt's The Shield of Achilles, it goes into the issue of the last 1,300 years of not just European history, but world history, has centered around one thing and one thing only, either the unification or reunification of Germany. And I would ask people to look, even if you're German, don't take this as an attack upon you and or the German people. you know, many Germans fled Germany to get away from what was going on in Germany. We have more Germans here in the United States now than in Germany. And it is upon the German people to stop, because Germany was a republic before what was carried on by Hitler, who wasn't even German. He was Austrian. And we look to these Austrian economists like Bernanke and even Kissinger came from Bavaria, raised in London to an age, and came here to the United States to, you know, betray the republic on behalf of these royal families, I say. This is my opinion, and you can argue against it, but just go out and study history, and you will see these common threads. Greenspan, who was brought in by Reagan, or Reagan was brought in by him, however you want to look at it, whether it's the president who appoints the Fed chair or the Fed chair who appoints the president, Reagan was a spokesmodel for General Electric. General Electric was started by J.P. Morgan, who helped fund it and create it. J.P. Morgan's son, J.P. Morgan Jr., was one of the signatories to the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. And Greenspan was knighted by the Queen. So was Ronald Reagan. So was George Herbert Walker Bush. And I know a lot of people would say that that doesn't matter, but when you look back to our founders' opinion and their anti-royalist sentiments, I think it becomes very clear, like even in the Titles of Nobility Act that was passed in 1806 and soon after the War of 1812 was concocted to burn the White House and the records for the White House, that included the passage of the Titles of Nobility Act. And I believe and would affirm from even my own dealings, Archie Morgan IV is a direct descendant of J.P. Morgan. He's directly involved in my own affairs. And we've talked about before how he used public services to his own end to call out the fire department, a fire truck, and a fire ambulance, and a police car at the World Trade Center in Long Beach, California, where they had the my proceedings in May of 2008, to scare me so that I might have a nervous breakdown, so that when they called in the Federal Protective Services and kept screwing with me and playing all these games, that they could cart me away somehow in fire ambulance. And I had actually gone over there myself and asked the security in the building what was going on, and they had no idea. So it was real clear to me when they left the back door for the fire ambulance open as an invitation, and there was no one there watching these very high-end vehicles with an open door to the ambulance with everything inside the ambulance, you realize that there's something weird going on. You just don't leave a fire truck, a fire ambulance, and a police car unattended. So, that's a little bit more. I don't know if that pops any more questions into your mind or if I went down a whole too many rabbit holes there all at once. But
well, again, a lot of information, but I think people would be interested to hear more about the latest stages of your appeal and what's going on with the NTSB.
Well, the National Transportation Safety Board is a civil service independent board. It's tied to the Department of Transportation. It comes under Title 49, CFR or USC, which is transportation. And in there, now I must appeal to the NTSB and have done so from the most recent Commandant's decision on appeal, which is put out by the Commandant, the Admiral, as the head of a new special branch of military and homeland security that I'm not in, that has prosecuted me since, and this goes before 2003, because they had been quote-unquote investigating me before 2003, and this goes back. I had actually sued, Archie Morgan is tied to one of the shipping companies, American Ship Management, and he was the afloat personnel manager. He's the descendant of J.P. Morgan. He went to my academy to Kings Point. But he was an employee of American Ship Management, which was American President Lines, which was Dollar Lines, which is tied to Roosevelt and Kennedy and many other power broker families and the Bush family as well. It was sold off, and Andrew Card was involved in this, former Secretary of Transportation under the first Bush. and the chief of staff to the second Bush. And Andrew Card also went to my academy to Kings Point. They sold off American President lines to the Singaporean government, a majority stake to the Singaporean government, which is, you know, basically a pirate capital and has been for a very long time. But they effectively sold off what was a U.S. Treasury asset to themselves overseas, carrying on this white elephant sale, much like had gone on in Russia before the fall of the Soviet Union, where they sold off all state assets, state property and more to themselves and handed it over. And that's what goes on in a republic, where whoever turns off the lights of the republic gets to decide where everything goes. But American Ship Management, which is a holding company or an operating company here in the United States, Archie Morgan worked for, I had sued American Ship Management, APL, NOL, Neptune Orient Lines, which is a Singaporean company it was sold to, in federal district court, along with Matson, a shipping company that goes back to the 1800s, and my Federal Officers Association that's called a union, and they had all banded together and then convinced the Coast Guard, after beating me up in federal district court, to bring suit against me in these military tribunals, to where they held me since 2003, minimally, if not before, until most recently in 2008, the Brzezinski put out a final order. I appealed that to the Commandant. The Commandant put out on September 30th, 2010, 2 years later, a Commandant's decision on appeal that I then had to appeal after being stuck in this branch of military as a civil servant. And they say that I'm acting under my federal license or my federal position throughout these proceedings. And that was put in there to protect us so that they couldn't hold us in there for 8-10 years, that it would be an enormous expense, that I would get legal aid, I would get medical benefits, I would get per diem, I would get my pay as if I was actually working on a ship. And instead, they're using it to deprive me of all those things, deprive me of life and liberty, and to a large extent even deprive me of freedom of movement, because they're not calendaring things. I can't go anywhere, because at any point in time, if I leave for more than a day, I could get some kind of motion that if I don't respond to and I default on it, that somehow, and that's what they've been trying to do throughout these proceedings for the last 8 years, is get me to default on the proceedings. And in a default position, I have to somehow appeal to the Coast Guard to reopen it. It's up to them to allow it to be reopened or not, and to decide if, you know, the default is good cause or not. And then it would become gospel truth that I am somehow, quote unquote, medically, mentally incompetent. And they could basically grab me and do whatever they want with me. Because then some, quote unquote, you know, legitimate authority, some legitimate court, even though it's not legitimate or lawful, has declared me to be medically, mentally incompetent. So now the appeal has gone from that September 30th, 2010 appeal from the Commandant to the National Transportation Safety Board, which was just filed. It was due on February 9th and filed a couple days before that. And it sits now before the General Counsel. And on many of these issues, the FAA, Federal Aviation Administration, if there's a case brought against an individual for their pilot's license or for documents that they need to work in the airline industry, and I would say stewardesses and others now, they're trying to make it to where you have to have all these quote-unquote credentials, and you know, they can pull them at any time if you complain, speak up, try to organize, union, whatever. And much of what is going on in my own situation is because I'm a union member, a trade unionist, much like in what happened in Germany. You know, they went after the trade unionists, they went after the social democrats, they went after the gypsies, they went after the Christians, they went after the eventually the Jews and more. And, you know, finally there was no one to say anything. And that's where we find ourselves nowadays, to where I had formal civil complaints in federal district court, which is a First Amendment right, a constitutional right and protection, to where they stepped on them, used this Coast Guard military tribunal to do so, to have me declared medically, mentally incompetent, to whitewash the civil complaints from federal district court that were about billions of dollars of theft of U.S. Department of Transportation funds and defense funds from DOD as well, to where these shipping companies are taking money that they're paid to provide services to the United States government and U.S. taxpayer, and then not providing them as contracted to do. And these there's more to it now, to where 97% of our international cargo coming into and leaving the United States is carried on foreign flag. So much of what I've stepped into is not just corruption of process and procedure internally. It's much bigger than that, where it goes to, there's people that are trying to take down our government from within. And I mean, now I'm before the NTSB. I don't know what will happen there. I don't see how they could send me back to the Coast Guard, you know, justly do so. The charges should be dismissed. I should be made whole. They should restore my naval commission and more. One thing that they had done in the midst of this back in 2002, 2003, prior to bringing charges against me, the Navy got involved, and the Navy wanted to, they even tried to, in the Coast Guard proceedings, have me go before a Navy hospital for, you know, an evaluation or whatever, just a medical for my naval commission and more. And I refused because of what was going on, because it was clear to me that one of two things. They were either, they actually told me not to say anything about what was going on, which I saw that they were basically going to give me a clean bill of health, grab me into the Navy, ship me overseas, and probably put me as a foot soldier somewhere in Iraq or up in Afghanistan in a, you know, in a hole somewhere or a cave, and then end up like Pat Tillman or someone else, to where you know, what went on is a dead and done story.
Indeed. Well, we are unfortunately running out of time for today's conversation. So is there anything that you'd like to leave the listeners with in the last few minutes so that we can set the stage for our next conversation?
Well, I can't believe that I find myself in this position. And we've tried getting lawyers, organizing to get some kind of defense fund going, tried to get other people to, and you're helping out immensely with this, and I really appreciate that, and I must thank you, not only in co-hosting the show, but also in having me on here and continuing to have me on here, to lay out more, at least for the record, in how they play this game, why, like, even, you know, Reed versus Covert is such an important decision, to where we're not as laid out in that decision by Hugo Black, a U.S. Supreme Court justice who wrote the majority opinion. We're not supposed to have, and I would say this goes for our military as well, because it's a conflict of interest for the military to have its own courts, that all of our courts should be underneath the Article 3 judiciary. And they've been trying to shut that down and defund our Article 3 courthouses. Even more so in the last 5 to 10 years, it's been an ongoing effort for much longer than that. It goes back to Reagan, if not, you know, well before. And I would say that a lot of people are attacking our country and our founders. I do believe that they did try to start something different. I do believe that they did try to start something just. I do believe that they did try to separate us from control and influence of these royal families. I do believe that they did try to place it in the hands of, by, and for the people. And that, and whether you're living in a kingdom or a member of the Commonwealth or here in the United States as, you know, what was once seen or may still be seen as a republic, or other countries that are some kind of democratic republic or hybrid, or some other type of self-governance, it is upon the people. And in a situation like my own, I cannot extract myself from this situation. And I must beg, and I hate to even put it that way, implore and plead other people to get involved and best, you know, or I guess worst case scenario, at least pick up the issues, understand and, you know, study the issues and understand the issues and make sure that what I'm trying to make clear to the people, that A, the Coast Guard should not be a branch of military. It should be a civil service. If it's going to be a branch of military, it should be subsumed into the United States Navy, into the Department of Defense. Anything that is military, contained and retained within the Navy, and anything else that is not, any kind of police or regulatory powers over civilians, shed and once and for all put under what is clearly a civil service that can never, ever again be brought into or under the military or trained under military terms, because that gray line is that rather than a bright line of separation or a line in the sand that you cannot cross between what is military and what is not, what is civilian and what is not, these gray areas allow for such a breach of that, of, you know, crossing the Rubicon, like back from the Republic 2,500 years ago in Italy, to where that northern river, the Rubicon in Italy, it was made unlawful, punishable by death. And I'm not trying to say we need to be punishing people by death, but even here in the United States, we take it pretty serious. It's supposed to be a 2-year prison term and a $10,000 fine for any encroachment in using any military assets or resources against civilians, not just overseas, but here in the United States, especially. And it shouldn't apply just to American citizens. It should apply to everyone, because otherwise we have these, you know, where we're carrying on a military police state and saying that we need to be the government for some other country, like what's going on in Afghanistan and Iraq, if not many other countries around the world. And I say that our military needs to be a defense force, and that we should not have an offense department, which is now our, you know, Department of War, Department of Defense, and a defense department, as in, i.e., the Department of Homeland Security, that was to be called the Department of Homeland Defense originally. And therein, in that name, belies what the true meaning and true scope and who is really running the Department of Homeland Security from behind the scenes, in, i.e., the Pentagon.
Okay, well, on that note, I think we're going to have to wrap it up for this week, but of course we'll be back on the air tomorrow in Republic Broadcasting in the Zone, and you will be back on the Corbett Report next week, so people can stay tuned for that.
And that would be, and the last thing is just, I could really use some help. I'm in such a black hole, and I'm still fighting to stay alive, survive, and warn and inform people, and fight through, quote-unquote, the system, but I could really use a good attorney or a group of attorneys, legal defense fund, and people writing about the issues, because that's really where any of that will come from, and continuing to write about it. You've done it yourself, and I thank you and applaud you for doing so. You have an excellent article out on it. And I would ask other people to do it so that, A, the issues stay out there and the issues are better explored and better explained, so that even the youngest amongst us knows and understands the issues and knows and understands the importance of them and why they must protest them.
Exactly right. Well, on that note, Lieutenant Eric Schein, thank you for joining us this week, and talk to you again soon.
Peace. Thanks, James. Talk to you tomorrow.